Shalom and peace, y'all.
Welcome to the Reverend Dan and Rabbi Matt podcast, where a pastor from Texas and a rabbi from California talk about everything from climate change to Fiddler on the Roof.
It's been 5 years since our last podcast, so buckle up for this special reunion edition from Sacramento to Bryan College Station, Texas. All right, well, hey, good people. This is Dan DeLeon. I'm the guest editor for the Spring Equinox edition of allcreation.org. Really glad to be here, selfishly, because I'm with my good friend, Rabbi Matt Rosenberg. This is a bit of a reunion of sorts. I'm going to introduce him to you more properly here in a second, but I got to indulge a bit and just share with you about why it means so much to me that the two of us are talking together, because we've known each other for years, and Rabbi Matt lives out in Sacramento, but we met here in College Station, Texas, where he was serving as the rabbi for Texas A&M Hillel, and I was and continue to be serving as a pastor of Friends Congregational Church, and we hit it off so well that we even had a podcast. So, Rabbi Matt, good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you, Reverend Dan. Good to be here.
This is the Reverend Dan and Rabbi Matt podcast reunion / all creation interview. Rabbi Matt, tell us a little bit more about yourself and practicing as a rabbi out in Sacramento. Would love to hear a little bit more about your vocational pursuits.
Yes, so I am here in California's capital, the Golden State, and loving it. This is where I grew up. My family moved to Sacramento when I was 4 years old. It's great to be back. Went to college at UC Davis, not too far away. And I'm currently serving as the executive director of the Albert Einstein Residence Center, which is a senior community founded by the Jewish community back in 1981. Became executive director here a year ago, and been serving as a community rabbi in Sacramento for a few years since I left Texas, and served as president of the Sacramento Board of Rabbis. I officiate weddings and funerals, and I teach in the community at a variety of synagogues, serve as a substitute rabbi when other rabbis are out of town, and just generally being of service.
You got a lot of irons on the fire, my friend. You are aware, as a rabbi, that on the seventh day, one is required to rest. There's got to be...
Oh, that's when I do all my reading and relaxing, and I stay as horizontal as possible on Shabbat. That's what I do.
Good for you. I'm glad you're taking good care, my friend.
God rested, and so should we.
Amen. Well, let's get into that then. I was wanting to talk with you in part about the creation stories from Genesis, but you know, before we go directly to that, I'm just curious about environmental ethics, stewardship of creation, taking care of the earth. Is there an environmental ethic in Judaism? And what does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, the theological underpinning of Jewish environmentalism is that God created the universe, and therefore God has complete ownership over all of creation. And humans are God's partners in bettering creation. There is a teaching from what's known as the Pirkei Avot, the Ethics of Our Fathers, which is from the first collection of the oral law known as the Mishnah, codified around the year 200. And it's in this collection of sayings and wisdom, similar to Proverbs, but you know, a little later than that. This says you're not obligated to complete the task, but neither are you free to desist from it. And I think of that in terms of our obligation towards the earth and the environment. When we say our main blessing, you know, there's so many blessings in Judaism. I'm thinking of near the beginning of the play and movie Fiddler on the Roof, where somebody asked the rabbi, "Rabbi, is there a blessing for the Tsar?" And the rabbi says, "Yes, may God keep the Tsar far away from us." And there is a blessing for everything, but our ultimate food blessing is a blessing over bread. And we say, Baruch Atarnai Elohim Melchalam Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz. Blessed are you, God, who brings forth bread from the earth. Well, God doesn't bring forth bread from the earth. God helps wheat to grow. but humans are in partnership with God in making, turning that wheat and tilling those fields and turning that wheat into bread. And so with environmentalism and with the environmental ethic, we're God's partners. It's hand in hand. And we have been given, you know, you might say dominion, mastery of this planet for now, for as long as humans have been around, for the past couple hundred years, 100,000 years. But we're stewards, and we have to protect this planet and partner with God to make it a better place and not desist from improving the world one generation at a time.
So the nature of that dominionism, that mastery, that stewardship, sounds like what I hear it sounding like is bringing the best out of the earth, helping the earth to be all that God dreams for it to be, just with that example of the wheat. Right. But I'm curious about that, if you could expand on that a little bit more, because mm-hmm. one of the things that is a constructive challenge, I guess you could say, is looking at this idea of anthropocentrism, mm-hmm. of humankind being the center of the universe. And that, unfortunately, is a lens through which if we see dominion through that, then it can be seen that, well, then humankind can do whatever it wants. Doesn't matter if that dominion means that the earth is not living to its full potential. It's all about us extracting whatever we can, whatever we want. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious about looking at it through an anti-anthropocentric lens, if that's something that's even possible to do, or if there is a way to look at dominionism through a lens of anthropocentrism that is not so narcissistic,
right?
I guess. Anyway, I don't know if you could help me with that, or if that even makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does, and you know, I think that it is any religious traditions are human focused, right? They're not religions for the whales and the dolphins, but you know, it's our job, according to my understanding, to maintain the basic balance to this order of creation. We have this ideal of trying to bring the world to this Garden of Eden place. And you know, that's only through the appropriate stewardship of resources. In near the verses we're going to be looking at today in Genesis, the Torah teaches that God gave fruit-bearing plants and to humans to eat. There was no permission to eat animals at that point. That didn't happen until after the flood and Noah, where humans began eating meat. The ideal is vegetarianism.
Okay. That's the ideal. Just out of curiosity, and I'm not trying to be convicting in any way, are you a vegetarian?
I'm an aspiring vegan. I'm vegetarian. I do occasionally eat dairy and eggs, and occasionally a pescatarian, but I would love to be a vegan.
Yeah, yeah. So to what extent is that rooted in your faith, if not exclusively?
It's not exclusively. It's also just about humane treatment of animals. And, you know, I understand what happens in the meat, dairy, and poultry industries. It is also about this ideal from the first chapter of Genesis, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's easy to keep kosher. You know, if I don't eat meat, I don't have to worry about two sets of dishes or waiting a certain amount of time between meat and dairy. It makes life so much easier. I can eat whatever I want, whenever I want. I mean, within my rules.
So did you, growing up and, you know, through adolescence and into young adulthood, did you look at the environment through the lens of the creation stories? You know, did you look at the environment as creation, as God made this? Or was that something that could be kind of compartmentalized, where I can keep my spiritual life over here as a Jew, but once I go outside and I'm in nature or the environment, whatever we human beings want to call it, I can leave that back in the synagogue, if you will.
No, I think it all ties together. You know, I don't believe in the literal 7 days of creation, but the 7 days of creation follows a geologic path quite nicely, you know, and I feel like there had to be something before the Big Bang or the Big Bounce 13 so billion years ago. And when I'm out hiking in the Sierra, I thank God for the wonders of nature. There's a blessing for seeing wondrous objects. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam, Oseh Ma'aseh Bereishit. Blessed are you, Lord our God, who has created the who creates the creations of creation, basically from the beginning. That there are these wonders that God is continuously creating. That, you know, we've had periods of glaciations that carved out Yosemite Valley, for instance, and have built up the Sierra Nevada and, you know, give us this amazing planet that we live on.
So being reminded of creation and what another person that we have interviewed for this edition, Dr. Norman Worspo, would call our creaturely identity, mm-hmm. is something that's really healthy through what you just described. I'll call it a spiritual hike. And yep. saying prayers, like you just said, because it reframes not only what's around us, but our belonging to it, our relationship with it, in a way that doesn't just say, "Oh, this is nice. This is serendipitous," or "This is a getaway." Right? Worse yet, that it's a getaway, because it's supposed to be a constant reminder of mm-hmm. creation and our belonging to it. So I wanted to ask you about that too, with something that I came across in listening to this podcast on Jewish studies, mm-hmm. asking that question about whether there's an environmental ethic in Judaism. Help me with the pronunciation. Tu Bishvat?
Tu Bishvat, yeah. Good job.
I try. But it was suggesting that Tu Bishvat is Judaism's environmental holiday, or Earth mm-hmm. Day for Jews.
Right.
Tell me a little bit more about that, because I'd never heard of this.
Yeah. So Tu Bishvat, the name itself just means the 15th of the month of Shvat. And this is the new year for trees. There are a number of new years in the Jewish tradition. Probably most of our listeners are familiar with Rosh Hashanah, the new year when we transition to the new number of the year. There's also New Year for kings and New Year's for tithing animals. But Tu Bishvat in the late winter is the new year for the trees. And this is how you count the age of, this is trees' birthday. And when I lived in Jerusalem for a year, it was amazing that right around Tu Bishvat is when the almond trees started blossoming and the olive trees. And it was just a beautiful sight. And now Tu Bishvat has taken on more of a environmental twist, and it's celebrated with a special Tu Bishvat Seder, where different foods and nuts are eaten, representing different aspects of the earth. And it's a beautiful holiday. This year it happened in late January, and every year it, of course, moves around based on the Hebrew calendar.
Is this, so if it's something newer, this is not something that you grew up with?
It was Shvat. I remember back even into religious school as a kid that there was, you know, some kind of tree, planting tree celebration going along with it, but it's the environmental twist is definitely newer.
Okay. All right. Something within that is, and I know I can't pronounce this right, Baal Tashchit.
Baal Tashchit. Baal Tashchit, yes.
Okay, I'm not going to try again. You can do it much better than me. But that it prohibits wastefulness and destruction.
Yeah, the mitzvah, the divine commandment to not destroy. And this comes from the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 20, where the Torah talks about if you have to lay siege to a city, you can eat of fruit-bearing trees, but you cannot cut them down. And what I really like from from chapter 20, verse 19, where it has its own commentary in the Torah, are the trees of the field human to withdraw before you into a besieged city? You know, like, it's asking this rhetorical question. Now, of course the trees can't take shelter behind the city wall. So who are you to cut them down? Like, trees have feelings too. Trees are people too. So later on, later in the tradition, it Baltashki comes to prevent and prohibit wanton destruction of anything, household goods, clothing, food, just any unnecessary destruction at all.
Yeah, I like that verse a lot too. Deuteronomy 20:19, are the trees of this other translation of it, are the trees of the field people that you should besiege them? And I was reading that in a way where, not only with what you just said about, hey, they can't take shelter, leave them alone, they got feelings too. It also kind of speaks to that idea of the Anthropocene, where I almost hear it like humankind shouldn't be placing itself above trees or assuming that they're better than trees. Are the trees of the field people that you should besiege them? They're better than you.
Right.
Almost. I mean, you can hear it. I can hear it that way. And it also kind of ups the ante on taking care of the biosphere, taking care of the environment, when if you're not to cut down trees during wartime, which I also came to understand is something that we is shared with our Muslim siblings with Sharia law. If you can't cut down trees in wartime, then what about when we're not in wartime? It's got to be
all the more so. Right.
Right. Yeah. Right. Sorry. Tell me more about that. I was curious if that was an ethic. But that outside of wartime, it ups the ante. That's how I heard it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we have this concept of kal vachomer, that like all the more so, you know, if you can't cut down trees in wartime, all the more so, should you not cut down trees when it's not war, all the more so, should you not just toss out extra food? Should you not, you know, destroy things that don't need to be destroyed? Reduce, reuse, and recycle.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Would a reading of an understanding of Tu B'Shvat now look at the way that we are treating the earth, our relationship with the earth, and feel that we're doing enough? I'm thinking about this with this, you know, our children's generation.
Right.
You have a 13-year-old, 11-year-old. Mm-hmm. I have a soon-to-be 17-year-old and 14-year-old. And they, you know, my son, for example, the soon to be 17-year-old will say, can I recycle this? And if we tell him, no, that can't get recycled, he goes, why not? Mm-hmm. I don't understand. Why can't I?
Right.
So back to my question, is Tu B'Shvat being observed adequately, or can we do better?
I think we can absolutely do better. There's no greater crisis to humanity right now, and there's a lot of crises, than climate change. And we should be observing Tu B'Shvat every single day, not just in Baal Tashchit and making sure we don't destroy, but also reducing and fighting to reduce emissions. And we're on this path of destruction for humanity. The Earth will survive. The Earth is going to last for billions of more years. But will humanity? And I think God has put us on this earth to find this balance, to find a role where we can use the earth's resources and not abuse the earth's resources. One of the additional irons in my fire is that I'm a lecturer in geography. I teach my students, when we're talking about human geography, that, you know, humans have been living in cities and having writing and careers and cubicles just for the last 10,000 years, but we've been around for 200,000 years. So 95% of human history, we were hunters and gatherers living, you know, in balance with nature, not overexploiting the resources around us, but just living off the land and having balance with the plants and animals around us.
Okay.
And it's only in the last 5% of human history that we've been, and even much less than that since the Industrial Revolution, where we've just been going crazy and overutilizing the Earth's resources.
So in the last 5% of human history, with the Industrial Revolution and how it just, everything changed for the worse, what changed? Fundamentally, what changed, do you think? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Why could we go from from such a long, rich history of belonging, relationship, good stewardship of the earth to this. What happened?
Well, one theory is that wheat domesticated us and became a, you know, wheat has done a very good job of becoming a very powerful species on our planet, and corn as well. And here we are kind of serving at the mercy of corn and wheat, doing its bidding, propagating it, and making it thrive to be one of the most important species on our earth. What happened? What did corn do to us? It's that high fructose corn syrup that got into our blood. Once we turned from being hunters and gatherers to settling in cities, you know, we just started using those resources.
Change your perspective.
And not thinking about what this means long term. And here we are with our cars and our airplanes and our fossil fuels, and we have but a few years to figure out where we're going to go from here and how we're going to protect our planet for our children and our children's children, truly, with sea level rise and everything else that's happening.
It gets more and more urgent, and it just seems that the more we talk about it and the more statistics we point out, it all makes sense. It's logical, but it's also very abstract. The more that it becomes particular, the more it becomes something that does affect you, something that you can be, as I'm continuing to say, more in relationship with, then it can affect your view. And this is something where we can't change behavior until our view is changed.
Right. And this doesn't affect just Jews or Christians or Muslims or any other group on the planet. It's affecting us all. This climate change knows no boundaries, and it's coming for us.
Yeah. So there's a lot of really good interfaith cooperation opportunities here, my friend.
Yeah, there should be. There should be.
There really should be. Right. Well, on that note, just out of curiosity, there in Sacramento, are there such efforts? Because there certainly aren't in here in Bryan College Station. I'd like to get some hope if there are interfaith relationships toward this effort.
Probably not enough. I'm not aware of any, but it might be something worth starting.
Okay, good. That can be your inspiration. Well, to kind of move to a conclusion with our conversation, I wanted to ask about a little bit more personal stuff. And let me set it up like this. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about change of view, change of perspective. Mm-hmm. It's in the New Testament of the Bible, or I should call it the Second Testament, there's this Greek word metanoia, which means, a change of heart or change of direction. And it has to do with our perspective, our view, how you see things. And how we see the world directly is going to affect how we treat it.
Right.
And so over time, I have had a metanoia when it comes to how I see the earth. Mm-hmm. And I, like you, it's not exclusively rooted in my faith, but a lot of how it is that I treat the earth is rooted in my faith. Why do I have the diet that I have and strive to have, the principles that I have when it comes to conservation, to protecting the biosphere, to raising awareness about this? It's rooted in seeing the world as creation, which is very much a faith imperative. So with that metanoia for you, is that something that has always been a part of your practicing Judaism, or has it been something that has been a kind of metanoia, something that has been over time, you being able to see the earth through this lens of faith, where you're able to incorporate it as a piece of your Judaism?
I think it's gradually developed over time. I mean, my undergraduate degree is in geography. I didn't get outdoors in college and beyond as much as I do now. And I think me being outdoors and also teaching geography too, and studying Judaism in Los Angeles as I did, being in California, really helped with all of that and led me to where I am today. And you know, working to definitely reduce and consumption of, you know, especially during the pandemic, all these disposable products has just been heart-wrenching. And it's been a process that combines my faith with my also observation and work as a scientist and human.
With everything being so heavy that we're talking about, my last question's got to be, what gives you hope? Or where do you get your hope?
I get my hope in the fact that humans are creative and we can come up with solutions, and there are answers to climate change and to the problems we see on our planet. And I have faith that my children's generation and their children's generation will do better. I see this long arc reaching towards the betterment of the world.
Amen. Okay, my friend, thank you, Rabbi Matt Rosenberg, for being with us on All Creation and talking with us about dominionism and giving us a boost of hope in how we can move forward. It's good to be with you, my friend.
Good to be here. Thank you.